It was another example of one of the criminal justice agencies failing victims. As part of the victims code, as you rightly mentioned, it's not stalking victims per se, it's all victims of crime. If an offender has been sentenced for more than 12 months, has a right to know when that offender will be released, and also a right to be involved in that process, give their any concerns they may have regarding license conditions and their security. I was not involved in that process. I have an inquiry has been made within probation, and apparently my case fell off the system.
What does that mean in practical terms?
That means that, from both sides, from victim liaison sides and from the offender side, managing the offender, notes were not updated on systems, handover wasn't done properly, and unfortunately my system just fell out into the ether and nobody knew anything about it. It wasn't until I made a call mid-November to find out what was happening regarding the release, was it then put back on the system. Had I not made that call, he would have been released without my notification and I would have been put at great risk. And I think that's really the catalyst for why I've started this campaign. As I've spoken to you over the years, Victoria, and you know fully well what's happened with my case, my rights as a victim, not just a stalking victim, but as a victim of crime, have been breached time and time again by many of the different agencies. And I think this was just the last straw, having to deal with probation, which I've not dealt with before, and being treated the way I was treated, made me realise that this can't go on any longer.
How were you treated?
Something has to be done. Well, obviously, I got involved, but they're not happy for victims to get involved. They want to do their job their way. It took a lot of my time. I almost felt I worked for probation to try and get the case back on the system, for things, for proper references, referrals to take place. He should have been referred to MAPA. Again, that had come off the system, and ensure that the license conditions were put in place. It was a big battle. That took 4 weeks of my time and energy to make sure everything was done that should have been done. They had a right to do that, and they failed to do that.
So were you in your dealings, were you treated as irritating or troublesome or
yes,
whinging?
Yes, always. Always treated as a nuisance. You are basically, you're used as a victim. You're asked to come forward and used as a piece of evidence. They want you to give evidence, and then they want you out of the system as quickly as possible. There is nothing set up within the criminal justice system to support you and protect you. They want you in and they want you out as quickly as possible. What they fail to recognise is the victim is central to the system, central to this process. The crime is against the victim, not the state. And that's where the issues lie. Mm. We need to do something about this.
In terms of this particular release, then, after your own dealings with them over a period of 4 weeks, the right things were in place. You were told of the date of Fogel's release, mm-hmm. only because you'd pursued them to tell you.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
On that day of his release, which was last month, what happened?
Again, I get very little information. All I know, and this was sort of 6 hours after his release, obviously going through a torturous day myself. Again, very little understanding of what the victim goes through, how their life is on hold and the huge impact that obviously the offender being released would have on a victim. I was notified quite late on in the day, in the evening, that he had gone missing and he had failed to turn up to probation to sign his conditions, nor was he at home for his tag. These are the two basic conditions that an offender would have to do when they're released under license conditions. And therefore, there was an emergency recall for him back to prison.
When you were told that he'd gone missing and hadn't turned up and so on, what effect did that have on you?
It was a massive effect. I'd already said for weeks that he would not comply. He has never complied in all these years with any conditions. Why would it be any different? And I was told that it would be different, that he would come out and he would have to comply. And of course I was right, as always, because the victim often understands the case better than any of these agencies involved. And that's the thing. The victim's voice is not listened to. As you said, we're often treated as a nuisance, but the victim needs to be involved in all these processes. They are an important part of this system, and they are denied the right to be involved. We have no representation when we go into court. You're given whatever prosecutor is there on the day. They barely meet with you, yet the defence has had months to work with the defendant and work on their case. You walk in, you know the crime, you own the crime, and you walk in and you get some prosecutor who knows very little information about the crime or the impact that it's had on you. How is that fair and how is that just? So the what I aim to do, I mean, obviously we have a victim's code. This was brought in 2006. But codes aren't really worth the paper they're written on because the agencies are still in breach of the codes. And there's no redress. So we need something legally binding, something enforceable. We need a victim's bill and statutory law to protect victims, all victims, not just stalking victims. I want to stress all victims of crime are affected by this abuse. We only had recently the Frances Andrade case and listened to what happened in her case. Sadly, this happens time and time again to many victims of crime. And who's supporting them? Who's protecting them within the agencies? No one. And that has to change.
The campaign, this campaign to get legislation now, because the code doesn't seem to be working, certainly hasn't in your own case. But once Fogel had been recalled that day, thankfully they were clearly able to find him. He's back in jail. My understanding is that it is any time now again that he could be released. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that's actually no fault of any agency. That's actually a fault of a system, of a process. Now he's able to come up for parole. After 28 days, he's able to come up for parole any day. And as a victim, you are left waiting on call by the phone for that phone call to tell you that he's been released. I may only get a few hours' notice. Mm. Again, I don't think the victim has been considered in that process. It's very hard to live life under that huge amount of stress, knowing that your stalker is going to be coming out any minute and not have a proper warning and not have a date set. I mean, there was a date set that it could have come up for parole. Of course, it wasn't kept and it gets moved time and time again. But that's a reflection of what happens throughout as well.
Yes.
You know, sentencing dates are adjourned time and time again. Trial dates are moved. And it's often down to just people not doing their jobs properly. But what people are forgetting is there is a victim at the heart of this, a victim's life that has been turned upside down. And to have an adjournment to a sentencing, I mean, I think I told you, it was adjourned four times over 7 months. He'd been found guilty and 7 months he hadn't been sentenced. He's out on bail. My life's on hold. Mm. No one's considering the victim at that time.
Okay.
So it's just trying to put the victim back into the heart of it. They are central to the criminal justice process and they should be treated fairly.
We're talking to Claire Waxman, who's been the victim of a stalker for years and years and years and has been continually let down by the justice system in England and Wales and is now asking the government to enshrine the rights of victims in law in England and Wales. Claire, how many years is it in total that this man has cast this shadow over your life?
Coming up to 10 years, 10 years in April.
Right. And when you receive a call to say he is going to be released from jail in the next 6 hours or 8 hours or at some point today, how do you prepare?
It's very hard to prepare. Obviously, you try and make sure you have everything as secure as possible with home and schools and work. But it's the emotional state. It's what that phone call does to you. Unfortunately, life goes on hold. I can't explain it any other way. The physical reactions are panic attacks. You're not able to leave the house. An emotional wreck. It's living under that constant cloud that I've lived under for a decade of this terrible fear. And that doesn't ever go away. There's still a lot of work to be done regarding stalking and awareness and understanding. Obviously, the law was brought in last November. I'm still seeing, when I deal with the agencies, a great lack of understanding regarding stalking and the impact that it has on its victims.
When you say the law was brought in, just so that listeners aren't confused with what you're calling for today.
That's the stalking law.
The stalking law, which specifically uses the word stalking in the legislation for the first time. In the old days, if I can put it like that, it came under the
harassment.
Harassment, yeah.
That's right. So it came in with the Protection from Harassment Act. There were amendments made to the original act to bring stalking in as a criminal offence and also recognise the psychological injury and the trauma that I'm experiencing and so many victims of stalking experience. But unfortunately, training is happening far too slowly for that to have a great effect for stalking victims. So all agencies need to be trained to understand the impact of stalking. So, but that's a separate issue. Clearly, that's something that I'm very much involved in and want to continue to campaign for, to ensure that all agencies are trained to understand how to deal with stalking victims and stalkers. So that's an ongoing piece of work, should I say. But I, as I said to you, I spoke to you a few years ago, if you remember, when the CPS breached my human rights by dropping a prosecution, by allowing my stalker to access the civil courts to stalk me further, and they said that he had a human right to be able to do that. They agreed with him that he had a human right. And obviously, as you remember, I took that to the High Court and took legal proceedings against the CPS because I felt they were in breach of their duty to protect me and my human rights. And of course, I won against them. But it just shows, it showed to me then, and unfortunately, that was sort of 3 years ago, and it's continued, how it's not just CPS, it's all agencies are in breach of their duty and care towards the victim. And there's only so much I can do about my stalker. In some ways, I just feel that'll go on for years and years. But I don't have to be subjected to the abuse and the disrespect and the way that I'm treated by all the agencies within the criminal justice system. I don't feel that's right. And it's not just me. It's all so many other victims of crime that I speak to. Obviously, when we did the parliamentary inquiry for the stalking law, we did a review of victims within the criminal justice system. This was stalking victims, and 72% said they felt they'd been failed by the criminal justice system. Now, obviously, that's for stalking victims, but I'm now starting to work with other charities and organisations, victims of rape, domestic violence, serious crime, homicide, and the response is the same. They all feel as if they're being re-abused, re-victimised when they go into the system. And this is something we can change and we should change because it's unacceptable.
Well, are you talking... I mean, you want legislation to enshrine victims' rights, if you
absolutely.
Like. But it sounds like a cultural shift is also needed. And let me ask you, do you think that the individuals who work in the relevant agencies who deal with victims, who have contact with victims on a daily basis, are treating them like this... is it thoughtlessness? Is it maliciousness? You cannot imagine anybody being motivated to treat a victim badly.
I don't think it's intentional. I just think it's a lack of training and a lack of understanding of how to approach the victim and how to deal with them.
And you know that a law wouldn't necessarily change that attitude, but you're saying it would help victims feel more empowered?
Absolutely. I think a law would actually change it because the agencies would be accountable. At the moment, they're not accountable for their actions. So if we brought in the law, we would have to make it compulsory to train all the agencies to ensure that victims are treated fairly and correctly. So that would come as part of the law. Mm. At the moment, you have codes and guidelines, which we all know are being breached time and time again. As I refer back to the Francis Andrade case, because that was obviously a recent case, that there are guidelines that she should have had counselling, and yet whoever the agency, and at the moment it goes from police to CPS, whoever's guilty of that, didn't give the right information. But no one will be accountable for breaching that code or that guidelines because it's not set in statutory law. If they're enshrined in law, someone would be accountable.
I have a statement here from the Ministry of Justice, and they say this. The government is clear that victims of crime must get the best possible support, both to help them recover from their experience and to help them through what we know can be a confusing criminal justice system. We already give £66 million each year to services dedicated to helping crime victims get their lives back on track and are making criminals pay much more towards victims' service pay. Just today, we have announced £4 million for 2013-14 for the 65 rape support centres around England and Wales. And we've funded 13 new centres since 2011. We've appointed a victims commissioner to make sure victims and witnesses' voices are brought to the heart of government. We're revising the victims code to ensure victims are given much greater clarity to their entitlements and to explanations about how the system works. And victims can formally register with the court now just how much the crime has affected them by making a victim's personal statement.
So if I can pick up on some of those points, they are, as I said, I've been involved with a roundtable meeting revising the victim code. But there is no redress. So when someone is in breach of the victim code, with an agency, should I say, you're then expecting the victim to complain. They write a complaint letter, as I have done many, many times. You get an apology letter back. And then if you wish to take it further, it's down to the victim to go to a member of parliament and then for it to go to a parliamentary ombudsman. You know, a victim's just been a victim of crime. Then they've been a victim of the system. You ask them to pick themselves up again and do that. So the victim's code, there's plenty in there that is great and that we could use for a victim's bill, but it's not enforceable. Mm. So it's all very well reforming it, but it has no teeth. It's got no weight. So we are, I personally think, wasting our time reforming a code when you could be putting it into statutory law. The second point, we talk about this victim impact statement or victim personal statement. That is the only voice the victim has within the system. However, nobody within the police agency, they're the ones that take the statement, are actually trained in how to take these statements. Now, I was always aware of when to do them, but they often weren't. When should be done just before sentencing, should be done just after the crime's been committed. More training has to go into that, so the police are fully aware of how to take the statements, because lots of victims aren't able to communicate how they're feeling. They're going to need guidance on that. Mm. That is their only voice. But I've had my statement edited, pulled to bits within court. The defence team want to take this part of it out, that part of it out. The police wanted to remove things. That is your only voice. So, and your only vehicle for the victim to express what impact the crime has had on them. So it's still not robust enough. So it's all very well saying these things, and it all sounds very good. Yes, they're spending the money, they're opening up more centres, which is great, and it's positive, but they're not going far enough.
Okay.
They have to go far enough by putting in a victim's bill.
A couple more thoughts from you, Claire. When Fogel is released again, would you expect him not to comply with the conditions?
Sadly... yes, and that's through a separate issue, because there's a lack of rehabilitation and treatment for stalkers. Mm. So I'm fully aware he's had no rehabilitation, no treatment programs, so why should his behaviour change? That's evident in the fact that he spent a year in jail, and on the day that he came out, he failed to comply once again. So, you know, why would I think things would change? Mm. Unfortunately, not enough has been done in that area to change his behaviour.
And what is it that continues to motivate you to keep battling away?
Because, Victoria, I feel I am stuck in this system. I've been in this system nearly a decade. And I sadly don't see how I'm going to get out of the system. You know, sometimes I wish I could go back 10 years and I may never have reported the crime, because even coming forward, the abuse that I've had to endure from every agency for the last decade has sometimes been worse than the crime itself. So, but I'm stuck here. I feel like I'm actually stuck in this system. And so what am I going to do? I'm not going to just keep complaining. I want to actually go out there and do something about it, making it better for me, but for all victims of crime in this country. I don't think anyone represents their rights. I don't think anyone looks after the rights of victims in this country. And it's about time the government did something about it.